Good evening, everyone. This is the meeting of the Pacifica National Board Elections Committee. It's Tuesday, December 4th, and this is Bob Lederer, the chair. And our secretary is not able to be with us tonight, so I will call the roll, and then we'll try to recruit a secretary pro tem. Okay, so Ken Aaron, Fred Blair.
Present.
Nancy.
Lydia Brazon.
Here.
Michael Novick.
Here.
Ivan Alsame. Revelin Gold. Thomas Potter. Porter. And Jane Gatewood said she won't be here. Nia Bediako.
Present.
Carolyn Burden said she would not be able to make it. Bob Lederer is here. Manajer Saba.
Caroline asked for the excuse after she's teaching.
Right. Yeah, we don't have any. The PNB does not allow for excused absences for any committee. Anthony Fest.
Here.
Sasha Putron.
Here.
Tracy Rosenberg. Andrea Turner. Teresa Allen.
Present.
Wesley Bethune.
Here.
Nancy Saibara Naratomi.
Present.
Okay, so that makes a quorum, and we can start the meeting. First, let me ask if someone would be so kind as to be the secretary pro tem, just to take very simple notes. It doesn't have to be detailed, just which motions were, you know, voted up or down, amendments. That's pretty much it. Anyone volunteer? It would really make a difference if we didn't have to, you know, try to beg someone after the fact to listen to the archive.
Okay, I'll volunteer.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Like I said, the bare minimum is fine. Just motions,
okay,
amendments.
Minimum.
You know, you don't have to get into the back and forth. This one said this, et cetera.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, great. All right, so I'm going to read out my draft agenda, and, of course, it's then open to amendments. So after the agenda approval itself, next would be what's listed here is number three, review and approval of available minutes for 5 minutes. Four is announcement of next committee meeting date, which is Sunday, December 16th. That's really just a two-minute announcement. There's nothing to vote on. Next would be report from the National Election Supervisor plus questions and answers, and I'm proposing 40 minutes for that, which last time I believe we actually took more than 40 altogether. Number six would be how to ensure quorum, which I know is a big issue at several stations. So I'm proposing 20 minutes for that. And then finally, number seven, the scheduling and playing of candidate carts at KPFT, which I know has been a concern of several people, and that I'm suggesting 10 minutes with an adjournment time of 10:15 Eastern. Are there any amendments? Okay, well, hearing none, is there any objection to adopting this agenda as stated? Okay, hearing none, it's adopted. So let's begin with review of available minutes, and as far as I can tell, we only have one set that Jane posted for us, which is okay, it's from the last meeting, November 16th. So I reviewed them, and it looks like everything is in order. Everything's correct. Does anyone else have any comments or corrections to what she posted for November 16th?
I had a question. I'm wondering if Terry Bruce's on the line already?
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. Terry asked if I could wait until he's due to give his report. If you have a question about the last meeting, we could get him on the line now. Do you, or were you just asking?
The minutes said that he reluctantly agreed. I guess it's moot now, but I think he is going to do it. So he should let it go. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm going to call him as soon as we adopt these minutes.
Okay.
Bring
sure.
him on.
Go ahead. That's fine.
Okay. Anyone else on the November 16th minutes? Okay. Is there any objection to approving these minutes? Okay. Well, hearing none, then the November 16th minutes are approved. So now, if you all will bear with me, I will just give Terry a quick call, and then we'll move forward with this report. Okay, he's coming on momentarily.
Great. So you had an item for the meeting date also?
Oh, thank you for reminding me. I did skip that. Okay. Yes, just to remind...
Bob, can you hear me?
Yes.
I didn't call into the thing, but I could still hear you. Can anybody else hear me? Or am I think I'm just on your phone.
Yeah, you know, I guess I didn't fully disconnect you.
I tried to hang up, but I couldn't. Can anybody else hear me?
Yes.
Oh. Yes.
Hey, that's an interesting way to get on. I guess we're on a two-way call, and I got on.
Right, but, you know, it might be simpler.
I call into the number?
Yeah, just in case anything
I'll
happens.
Try and hang up again.
Sorry.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so... The next committee meeting will be on Sunday, December 16th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. This is as per the vote we took at our...
Hi, Terry's here.
Hi, Terry. So I was just announcing. Someone else just joined?
Yeah, hi, this is Andrea.
Oh, hi, Andrea. Okay. So, yes, the next meeting, Sunday, December 16th, 8:30 Eastern, as per our vote at the last meeting. And who just joined?
Michael Novick. I turned my head and I lost my signal.
Okay. Okay. So, Terry, now we're allocating 40 minutes. Obviously not, you know, we know
right.
you don't
I have
40 minutes
to report so
but there's, I'm sure, a lot of questions. So let me just ask Nancy, can you start the clock for 40 and let us know when we get to the 30-minute count? Nancy?
Okay.
I'm doing that.
I'm sorry?
Nancy wants to do that, too.
Oh, no, I'm confused. Nancy is taking minutes, and who is that, the volunteer to do timekeeping?
Anthony here.
Anthony, right. Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, yes, go ahead. Yeah, you got it, Anthony.
All right, so I don't know how much detail go into it all, so I'm going to be kind of brief here. Let's see.
I think we'd like more detail.
Okay. Bad addresses. Election Services Corporation gets returned mail, and any time they do a mass mailing, addresses that are not good or deceased individuals or forwarding period has expired, things like that. Those, as they get them back in batches, I'm forwarding those on to the general managers at each of the stations to see if they can find better addresses. Because ESC will remail those ballots if the foundation come up with better addresses. And at least some of the stations I know have found some new addresses and ballots have been remailed to those people. We are obviously, when it's a deceased, ballot mail comes back saying recipient deceased, we will remove them from the member list and reduce the quorum requirement, kind of a gruesome way to reduce the quorum requirement, but it's true. As for quorum, I've circulated the last week's and this week's ballot count, or actually envelope count, because we don't know. Some of those envelopes could have two ballots in them. Some could have no ballot and only have a member survey or something like that. So it's a rough count. KPFA, if anybody hasn't looked at the spreadsheet, they've made the quorum already on the listener election, and I think they're only like two ballots short on the staff election, so they're golden. WPFW is actually doing pretty well. They're pretty close. They have a decent shot, except that there's tremendous controversy going on at WPFW right now, which I don't know if everybody, I guess everybody is, that's right, I remember Jane sent those emails around to the PAC elect list, so everybody is aware of that. And according to the local election supervisor down there, there are some people who have been advocating in call-in programs that they aren't going to send in their ballot because they're fed up with blah, 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 blah. So I don't think there's any organized boycott of the election, but where we were kind of close to the quorum, there is some anxiety that the turmoil at WPFW may make getting quorum more difficult. At KPFK, they're very far from quorum, and KPFT, they're pretty far from quorum. WBAI has an additional week, so it's too early to make an assessment about WBAI. The ballots were mailed a week later. So what I'm planning to do is we're doing another post office box count of the envelopes that are in on Friday, and at that point I will make a decision about whether to extend the election close date for any station that has not reached quorum. If a station is just a handful of ballots short of a quorum, we'll probably go ahead and check the box for them again on the close date to see if they have quorum been reached. But if they're substantially short of the quorum on the Friday check, I'm simply going to declare that there is not a quorum. I'm not going to bother to check them again on the Tuesday. We're just going to extend it automatically for at least one full week for those stations. Those stations that are most likely to be in that situation. And here again, I'm saying stations, and of course there could be a difference between the listener and staff. I tend to be focusing on the staff, but in some cases it will just be, focusing on the listener election. In some particular case, it may be that, you know, a staff or a listener does make it and the other one doesn't. But I'm just going to talk in shorthand here. The stations that are most likely to have a problem seem to be KPFT and KPFK. And it's most likely that those two stations, I will simply end up extending the close date for a week to make it the same day that we're currently aiming to do the WBAI tally, which is December 18th. If we can double up the tallies on the same date, it saves Pacifica money because Election Services Corporation has to charge for each additional day that they come together and bring their staff together for a tally and rent a room and so on. So I'm going to make that formal decision after I get the envelope count on Friday. So no station has yet been declared to have an extension yet, and that decision will be made on Friday. However, some stations, there's been issue about whether there's going to be, for example, a Sunday night or Sunday afternoon ballot drop-off where it's possible, I said that if the local election supervisor deems it prudent and can arrange security and witnesses, et cetera, observers, that it's permissible for the local election supervisor to set up a system where people bring in ballots to the election supervisor or his or her designee, an impartial person designated, to receive ballots, put them into an express mail envelope and mail them overnight to the P.O. Box Election Services. My preference is to not do that. I know it's been done in a lot of previous years, but there's this fundamental difference when we're using an elections company using business reply envelopes where people don't have to pay postage. So there's no money savings by bringing in your ballot. In fact, it's much more of a burden than to simply place it in the post office box. So the only stations where we would be likely to do a Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, whatever, drop off of ballots is a station that is right near the cusp of reaching quorum. And the only station this weekend that looks like it might be in that position is WPFW. So I've talked to John Bush, the LES there, and I don't know if he's made a formal decision or announcement about what he's going to do, but I believe at this point, so don't spread the word that it is going to happen because it's not official yet. I think it's likely that there will be a Sunday drop-off at WPFW of ballots. But I don't want that rumor to be spread because if some member does not mail in their ballot because they're planning to bring it in Sunday, and then we don't have a Sunday drop-off, or they forget to bring it in Sunday, but if they had mailed it tomorrow, it would have reached, you know, Long Island in time, it could be, you know, disservice and disenfranchising those voters. So I don't want rumors spreading about there being Sunday drop-off. At this point, there are no station Sunday drop-offs, weekend drop-offs planned. There may be one this week, but the only station I think that's likely to happen at is WPFW. Let's see what else. Then there's the whole issue around supervision at the tallies, which I sent folks an email.
Terry, can
I interrupt
you? I'm sorry.
Sure.
Why don't we take each topic one at a time, you know, Q&A
right.
on that topic, and then you go on to a different topic.
All right.
So that's okay. So questions and comments about the quorum issues that Terry raised? I'll take a stack.
Teresa for the stack.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Go ahead, Teresa.
Can you tell from the postmarks on the mail how quickly they are coming in? Like if somebody mailed it 5 days ago, would it likely have been in the post office box?
I don't think the ESC did not report on what the postmarks on the envelopes were. That's not what they were doing. They're just sorting them by the color code on the envelopes and then counting them. I can ask them when they go on Friday to find that out, but I don't know that information. And obviously, in every situation, you know, there are going to be some that get there in 1 or 2 days and some that take 6 days. That's just the way the post office works. Even if they're coming from the same city, there is variation. And so I don't have the information. In theory, it could be determined, but not until Friday.
And my other question is, did you say that if there's return mail, that doesn't affect the quorum?
If we simply have a bad address for somebody, but we still believe that they exist and are members because they've made the money, that does not remove them from the member lists. We simply don't have their good address, but they are still legally, by our bylaws, by your bylaws, they are still members, even if we don't have their address. So that does not reduce – simply getting bad mail back does not reduce the number of members. What does reduce the number of members is if we get something back saying the person is deceased.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also I should say there are some new members being added all the time. You know, there are people who call election services saying, I didn't get a ballot. If they are in their database and we determine that we simply have an old address for them, they remail the ballot, void the previous PIN, give them a new ballot with a new PIN, and mail it out. If they were not on the database provided by Pacifica to ESC, then they send those to the local election supervisors who are checking with station personnel, management and MEMSIS people trying to verify whether they're members. And so quite a few, several dozen members have been added to the voter list. I don't know exactly how many. It's not a huge number at any station, but it is, there are a number of people who are getting ballots who were not on the original lists.
Bob, could you put me on the list?
Sure. Okay. Go ahead, Terry. Finish.
I think that answers the question. I think I'm done.
Okay,
oh, okay.
So put Teresa, put me back on the stack to ask a couple more questions later. Thank you.
Sure. So I got Andrea, Teresa, and then myself. So Andrea, go ahead.
Just a quick question. I'm curious about the security of the data list. How is that being managed? Can anyone just get a hold of that data list?
No. When the lists were transmitted, Otis is the point person for the foundation who all the data went to. He put it into a standard. He put it into a standard format for ESC so that, for example, they require that everybody have a unique member ID. Well, unpaid staff don't have IDs assigned by the station, so Otis had to make up IDs and have a system so that, you know, like if it starts with a 6, it's a KPFK or whatever. So he had some systems where he had to assign IDs. Anyway, and then he uploaded to a secure, he had to have a password, and it went to some super secure website upload kind of thing. So it's been treated rather securely, but not 100% securely, because there have been some lists that have been shared through Gmail to me. And so we're trying to use, for example, zipping them with passwords and things like that. They're, you know, it's a true computer spy who knew exactly what was going on could probably figure out how to get at them in transmission, but I'm reasonably confident that nobody did.
Reasonably. Okay, because there is some rumor that the emails have been compromised or whatever.
Almost none of the member lists that were distributed had emails. One station, we asked them to provide emails because in the original contract before we eliminated the e-voting, there had been a plan that ESC would send email blasts. So we originally asked them, but by the time we were collecting the lists, Internet voting was pretty much on the outs. And so I think only one station provided emails. All the others, they weren't even there. And so I think if emails were released somehow, I don't think it was through the distribution that went to Otis and to ESC. It had to be some other way. I mean, I can't say it had to be, but Otis is pretty anal about that.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I just want you. I want you to know it is an issue. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Teresa, and then myself.
Okay. Now I forgot.
And Sasha, please.
I've forgotten my mess. My.
That's fine. We'll come back to you. Sasha, and then myself, and then Teresa.
Yes, hi. I just want to follow up. What station had email addresses sent to you?
I'll have to look. I tell you what, why don't somebody else ask a question, and I'll try and open up some files while people are asking questions. Maybe I can find out which station it was.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, I guess I'm up next. I just wanted to get a little more detail about ESC's protocol for phone requests for replacement ballots or ballots that never came, because I have been hearing some complaints that 3 and 4 days have gone by in some cases, and they leave a voicemail, and they never hear anything. They don't get their ballot. So do you know what steps they go through?
Yeah. If the member calls and says they didn't get their ballot, what they do is they check to see if they're in the database. If they're in the database, they mail out a ballot pretty much within a few hours. They do that. They send out ballots 3 times a day from ESC. So if somebody's in the database and they request a replacement ballot and they give a correct mailing address, a new mailing address or something like that, the ballots go out that day. And if they come in overnight, they're sent out by 10 a.m. the next day. So people who are in the database, those ballots go out very quickly. If they are not in the member list that Pacifica provided to Election Services Corporation, they send an email to the local election supervisor saying, is this person eligible? Let us know. The local election supervisor then has to do an investigation, which involves checking with MEMSIS people, checking with whoever does volunteer management or whatever process they can try to do to find out whether the person is eligible for a ballot. Sometimes we're able to do it very, very quickly, just send an email around and someone says, for example, today, or maybe it's yesterday, I had somebody who's been providing food to the phone call answerers for like 10 years. That should count as volunteer time. It was decided, but they had no system for recording the people who were providing free food for years. And so there are places like that where we immediately got someone saying, yes, that person is a volunteer and they should count. But other times, it takes a long time to find out, and so there can be a lag of a couple of days at least before we determine that the person is or is not eligible. And once we get a determination, they're notified.
So just to follow up, is it too much to ask ESC to get back to the people who are not in the database and say, look, we're checking, it may take a couple of days, rather than leaving the person hanging for 2 or 3 days?
I could make the request to them. The fact is that they are dealing with multiple elections. Pacifica is not the only election they're dealing with. And if we had contracted with them to provide additional labor for phone answering, or we've done a separate contract for phone answering, we might be able to get more out of them. But at this point, I think realistically, I think ESC probably is losing money on the Pacifica election. I don't think they anticipated. I think they bit off more than they thought they were going to chew. And I tend to doubt that we would get them to increase their staffing for returning from those. They're trying to get the ballots to the people as quickly as can, as they can, rather than simply calling people to reassure them. They're just trying to get the ballots to them.
Okay.
And I could make that request, but it's like they're out there. I mean, they're stretched.
Yeah. No, I understand. Well, one last little point. So then, do you know if they have regular hours on the phone where you can actually reach a human being?
They have human person. They have during business East Coast business hours. They have a live person.
Okay.
But even if it's a live person, there will be times when they're receiving multiple calls at the same time, like three people are calling at the same time and two go to voicemail.
Right.
Periodically, particularly on weekends, particularly on Sundays, we're hearing reports that some people are saying they get messages, voice mailbox is full.
Right.
And they clean them out, you know, when they get in. But we have gotten some reports of that, and that was not anticipated. I think ESC did not anticipate the relatively low quality of Pacifica's member lists.
Okay. All right.
Nancy, quick question.
Yeah, go ahead, Nancy.
Bob, are you finished?
Sure.
Okay. When people have a joint membership and they got only one ballot in the mail, and then they called ESC, and the ESC said, we'll check with KPFT membership person,
right.
And 3 days later they want to go into the station, and the membership coordinator doesn't know anything about it. And is there any help for that? Or
what ESC is doing is sending an email to the local election supervisor saying, these are the people we have received messages from who are not in the database to get a ballot. What do you want us to do? The local election supervisor then has to deal with the management, the staff who are controlling the database to try and get information. If the person gave more than $50 and there's two names, then we will divide their membership as they're entitled to. But in some cases, like we got one call from somebody who said, my ex-girlfriend got the ballot, and I wanted the ballot, and they only gave $25, and her name was listed first on the member list in the MemSys, and so he said, I'm sorry, you have to get the ballot from her. We're not going to cancel her ballot and give it to you. So there's a constant stream of things like that, and my impression is that ESC is handling it rather professionally, but they are rather inundated.
Okay, because these people are, like, giving up to call.
This is Lydia.
Sure, I'll add you, Lydia. Okay, so, Terry, have you been able to look for the answer to Sasha's question?
I've only looked at KPFK so far. I've been talking too much. KPFK did not provide emails, and KPFA did not provide emails, and I'm still looking. Does anybody have a particular request? Do you want me to look at your station first?
All right. Well, then let's go on with Zach.
Can you hear me? I don't know if I'm on mute. This is
Oh,
Josh.
Now I can.
Okay. Just very quickly, I just really wanted to know about KPFA. So you've answered that question. I don't know if other people want you to keep doing research or not, Terry.
Yeah, KPFA did not provide emails.
Okay.
Or if they did, we did not provide them to ESC. Because I have what Otis finalized, I believe, and it's possible he stripped out the emails, even if they did provide them. I don't know. But anyway, I know that those two stations, KPFK and KPFA, did not provide emails.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So next I have Michael. And then let me read the stack. I have Teresa, Lydia, and then myself again. So, Michael.
Yeah, we had expressed a concern about Spanish language response on non-receipt of ballots, and I'm not sure if anything has been done about that or how you think it could be dealt with. And then I've expressed to you my concern about...
Can you repeat that? I was a little bit distracted.
Sorry, I was talking about the need for Spanish language response to people who have not received ballots at KPFK. We have a substantial Spanish-speaking audience. We have Spanish language programming about, you know, 4 days a week.
Right. Do you want me to answer that, or do you have two questions?
Yeah, well, briefly, I did express my concern to you about the need for receipt of ballots at the station. I know you said you only want to do it maybe at PFW this week. I think if we could avoid an extension by getting the ballots in, that would be preferable at KPFK.
Yeah, at KPFK, it's so far from quorum that what my assessment on that issue is that if Friday KPFK is like has reached quorum, then we count them, right? On Tuesday, if they haven't reached quorum, on Friday I'm simply going to extend it. There's no additional cost in terms of the election services part because they're already planning to do a WBAI tally a week from now anyway. So extending it 1 week for KPFK doesn't cost any additional money. It gets more people to have a chance to get their ballots in. As to the question about...
It's just we're already in fund drive again, and having to extend the election deeper into the fund drive and trying to continue to promote the need for people to send their ballots longer into the fund drive is going to be irksome, I'm sure, to the staff and management of the station.
Yeah. Well, yeah, irksome. As for Spanish, when the foundation contracted and put out an RFP to election companies, that was something that was not anticipated by whoever wrote up the RFP, and it was not something that was asked of the companies. Once Election Services Corporation was selected, I did check with them a couple months later, saying, do you have Spanish-speaking people on staff who can answer calls? And they said, no. We've talked with Seoul about trying to get up something where there's a script. And I don't know if this has been accomplished or not. Seoul was going to try. He's the LES at KPFK. He had a volunteer who was going to write a script that could be written out phonetically for the Joel, who's the guy at ESC, to read to a Spanish speaker who calls, which would give them an alternate phone number, which would be a volunteer in Los Angeles who is bilingual, who could basically receive the call and then relay the message on to ESC. That was the idea that Seoul and I worked out. I don't know if that's been completely implemented or not. I know Seoul's been rather busy, but I don't know if that's done. And yeah, this whole Spanish language stuff, particularly at KPFK, where it's most significant, has definitely been lacking this election. At the very beginning, we talked with the general manager there about whether there was budget for hiring any translators, and it's like, no, we don't have any additional money, and it was not in the contract. So we did try. We got some things translated, you know, like the ballots for KPFK have Spanish instructions and say call this number, but now we say call this number and the person there doesn't speak Spanish. So it's not perfect. And we have, you know, Spanish translations of candidate statements on the website and so on, but it's far from ideal. It's, you know, make do, and I'm sure a lot of people feel like we did not make do. It was not even sufficient, but it's where we're at. So I don't want to defend it, but it's where we're at.
Okay. Teresa,
I have one other piece of information here.
Sure.
WBAI staff list have email addresses on them, so it's possible that WBAI staff email addresses did get transmitted to ESC.
Okay. So Teresa is next, and then Lydia, and then myself.
Can you hear me?
Now
I can.
Okay. Well, my question is, Terry, you're telling me that some stations are behind in getting the votes. Have you any feel for what is the factor that contributes to more ballots being
well, yes,
submitted.
I have a very clear sense. KPFA has been at war.
Do you have any other? Okay. And do you have any suggestions for, other than starting a war, motivating people? What are the? Do you have any? You know.
Well, I think it's the same thing we said last time.
Better than others.
I think it's the same thing we said last conference call. Is I believe the most powerful inducement to get people to mail in their ballots is to have somebody who they know, whose voice they know and respect, on the radio saying, "I send in my ballot. I hope you will too." Something of that sort, which is more of an affirmative, join with me, be like me, this person you admire. It's important to me. I hope it's important to you. Rather than, you know, castigating them or saying, "You naughty people, you haven't sent in your ballots, you better do it." You know, obviously, no, that's just the psychology of it. But the fact is that when at KPFA, where there's been real forceful division within the community around certain issues, those people have mobilized and they have gotten out their side to vote, presumably. And I'm guessing that there's probably not a higher percentage of listeners who are not interested in politics, which are true at all stations. I'm guessing no more people at KPFA who are in that mindset sent in their ballots than anywhere else. It's the people who have been brought into this internal division about what is the future of KPFA and Pacifica. And that's not something I necessarily advocate for other stations to emulate.
Okay, Lydia is next.
No, I agree with Terry that definitely the war part helped. It helped in the early 2000s, et cetera. But nevertheless, most of here at KPFA, most of what I hear is they don't, you know, these are just names to them, so they don't know who to vote for. So until there's a point of reference, they don't. Motivated. But anyway, my question is, Terry, do you think you can find out from ESC what would be the norm in terms of return on something like this based on the size of your station? If ours is 18,000, what would be the normal for an organization that...
You know, it's really all over the place. I mean... They have like 140 clients that they deal with every year, and you know, some of them are unions, some of them are like they do the national vote, 800,000 members of the Sierra Club, and then a lot of the large organizations like Sierra Club, I don't know the actual numbers, but I would be surprised if they got more than 2 or 3%. Whereas maybe some relatively small union local might have 80-90%, depending on whether there's hot issues within the union. Voter participation is tied to controversy, quite frankly. If everything's going along fine, people don't bother to vote.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean return with ballots. I meant wrong addresses. And
I'm sorry.
Sorry. No, my fault. I have not
asked them about it. I can ask ESC about how our member list data is compared to other organizations as just sort of a curiosity factor. Maybe it's something that we can use to convince stations to put more resources into record keeping if it's really bad. But if also it's possible, they'll say, "No, you're about typical," and that might be interesting to know. I mean, I've been to a lot of groups where they say, everybody says, you know, progressives, they're always late for the meetings. And I'm sure the right-wingers say, you know, right-wingers, they're always late for the meetings. You know, everybody has this idea that their group is particularly worse and, of course, also particularly good also.
Okay. Thank you. If you could find that out, that would be helpful.
I made a note. Okay.
Since the next election is right around the corner. Thanks.
Okay. My question is about the staff list. At each station, particularly, of course, the unpaid staff, since that's the one that, you know, there's always, you know, management makes decisions about who is on the list and who is not, and that can be problematic. So my question is, do you know who within the staff at each station was actually responsible for compiling the list?
I do not know that. Local election supervisors, I think every station had serious problems with not only getting lists, but figuring out who, you know, there's a lot of buck passing. Ultimately, it came down to the general manager and or program director saying, yeah, this is the list. But they weren't the people usually who created the list. It was farmed out to a lot of people. I mean, KPFA was a unique circumstance because they have a recognized unpaid staff organization, which was, quite frankly, incredibly problematic. And KPFK gave us a lot of staff members with no mailing addresses, which really is going to hurt the quorum challenge at KPFK because they are considered members because they gave them to us and said, yep, these people have done the work required, and we don't have any way of mailing things to them. And it is just really, really frustrating. As for who at each station, I don't know. The local election supervisors could probably fill in more. I know that I can tell you at WBAI, Kathy was probably the key person that Terry had to deal with, Teresa had to deal with, but I don't sense that she actually generated the list.
Okay. Well, I think it would be useful to ask the LESs to include in their reports information about how and who compiled them, not for purposes of casting blame, but just to understand where the breakdowns are and where the process might not be done as correctly or smoothly as it should be. So that's one issue. And a related issue is that how can a staff member at a given station find out who else is able to vote? Because in every preceding election, except this one, the lists have been publicly posted. They've been circulated on email lists, not with address information, anything that's in any way confidential, but and these are people that are well known to the other staff, and they're well known to the listeners in large part, but not fully. Not every single person is known. Many of them are on air, but not all.
Right.
And so it's a problem if staff don't know who is part of that voter
right.
pool.
Right. There's two pieces to this. First off, California law, as I've been told, requires that a foundation organized in California, which Pacifica is, make the ability of members to contact other members during election possible. The way that's been done for the listener elections, obviously, is by providing the mailing addresses to a mail house under a confidentiality agreement where there's one-time mailing by Slate and so on. For staff, presumably that can be done as well. In fact, I believe that was done at least one station. I know at one station there was a request for the staff list in addition to the listener list. I don't know if a Slate mailing was sent or not. As for whether the station is going to release the list of staff generically without identifying information about address and so on, that's basically a foundation and station decision. It has nothing to do with election supervisors, and it's something for the local station board and or the foundation public national board, Pacifica National Board, to make a policy about what's going to be done about that. At this point, I believe at most, if not all the stations, they have not released the list of staff. I know at WBAI, after a lot of resistance, a list of staff was released to at least one person who requested it. I don't know if other people requested it or not, but I know at BAI, one staff member was insistent, a lot of emails, and eventually management said, okay, and a list was sent.
Well, that's, as a staff person myself at WPAI, that's very distressing because
Did you make a request to the management to get
No, but I know that there were others who did, and it just is very problematic that it's released to one person and not... I mean, the moment it's released, it should be released to everyone. There shouldn't be any individual treatment, regardless of how insistent one person was. If it's public, it's public. Then everyone has the right to see
it. Well, I don't think it was considered public. It was like, you are a member here. You requested this. We do not have – I guess the decision was we don't really have the authority to simply hide it from you. So, okay, here it is.
Well,
and
that's what
I meant by public.
I meant it in that limited sense of other staff people have an equal right to the person who obtained it to also obtain it, but they shouldn't have to request one by one by one.
That's a foundation and a station issue.
Okay, well, I think it's an election fairness issue. But all right, are there other questions or comments? Manager, and then
So we're probably going to want to extend.
I'm sorry, how many minutes?
We got 3 minutes to go, so I'm sure we'll want to extend.
Sure, thank you for that. Okay, go ahead, Manager.
Hello.
I have a comment about this. My comment about this issue that was probably being talked. I think is the responsibility of LSB to ask the management, if the LSBs, the who is responsible and all of that, and get an answer from them, then that person could be point person, and you know, the staff knows who is responsible, and they talk or go after them. Some of these things are not, you know, election supervisor decision. And asking, for example, Terry to have it on the report. If somebody doesn't answer her, people don't answer her. But it's LSB's responsibility to determine, to find out exactly who is doing what and where the list is supposed to be generated by, who's supposed to be generated by, and who gets it and who doesn't get it. And you are right. I agree with you, Bob, that if one person gets it, everybody should have it.
Okay, so we're just about at time, and Terry has not had time to address the issues about the tabulation. So why don't we,
Hello?
Yes, who wants to speak?
This is Ivan on the call.
Oh, hi, Ivan. Okay.
Ivan from WPFW.
Okay. Did you have a question, or you just want to announce your presence?
Just want to announce my presence.
Okay, thank you very much.
And
all
Sasha would like to speak.
Okay, so we have Sasha on this round, and then there's the other round that Terry hasn't gotten to yet, which is about the tabulation process. So I would suggest, is there any objection to a 15-minute extension of this discussion? Okay, hearing none, then that's approved. And Sasha, you're up next. And,
yes,
then we'll go back to Terry.
Sure. I just want to make a note. Terry said something about KPFA was in a unique situation, and I guess got a list, but was also because there was an UPSO, an unpaid staff organization, but that also it was incredibly problematic. And I wanted to ask him to expand on that, but I also wanted to make a comment about that. This is KPFA staff list is an ongoing problem, and I hope this gets dealt with at some point really soon. For one thing, KPFA does not require, as all the other stations do, 30 hours per quarter to be unpaid staff, but 30 hours in a year. And so sometimes, you know, you can have not seen a person around. Do you know if it's 10 months or 15 months? Who can really remember? And we have always have contended staff lists because there is no keeping track of people's time. And we have, in fact, on the board passed something to have that put into place. And as far as I know, it has not been put into place by management yet. And I just want to make mention of that. And then in our case, the staff list was actually put together by Anthony Fest, who is, as people said, there is an internal war, and he is one of the leaders of one faction, a different one that I'm on. And it's really incredible when one person puts together a list and who's part of it. And that really, you know, I'd really like to know Terry's feelings about that and what he found was so incredibly difficult about the KPFA staff list. Hello?
Terry, are you still there?
Muted. Can you hear me now?
Now we can hear you.
I was muted. Okay. Yeah, the bylaws say that if there's a recognized unpaid staff organization, the unpaid staff are those people who are members of that organization. And so basically the local election supervisors have to take the lists that's provided by the organization. There's been the organization at KPFA is barely, arguably, even functioning. Incredibly marginal. It's not clear whether they follow their own internal organizational requirements. There was a little bit of pressure put on by us on the general manager. Do you really think this thing deserves to be recognized? They don't seem to know who their officers are. They don't seem to have any data on mailing addresses of their members, who is, who isn't a member. And I don't know exactly the history of why, but it seemed to be, this is an impression rather than fact, so don't state this as fact. My impression is that the general manager didn't want another battle on another front and was willing to let that, it wasn't even a sleeping dog, but let that dog be. He didn't want something else growling at him. And so we were left with what the organization said were members. And either the bylaws or the management process or the relative power of management compared to the unpaid staff organization, something should be changed. It is not good.
Tracy for the check.
Okay.
Anthony.
Tracy, then Anthony. Go ahead, Tracy.
I don't know what the holdup is at KPFA. I've never gotten a clear answer to that, but as people probably know or might know, there's been a staff hour recording database that's been available for use for some time, and we've been told that it would be installed at KPFA at any moment, and we've been waiting for months. I don't know what the managerial holdup is, but that's how you verify hours. And I've been around KPFA a long time, and periods of time with UPSOs and periods of time without UPSOs, it's been exactly the same problem. It has nothing to do with the UPSO. It has to do with the fact that the hours are not recorded. So it's always one person's word against someone else's word. And that has been contentious from the get-go.
Yeah, I can just say that...
Let me finish, okay? As soon as I'm done. In terms of the UPSO itself, it was derecognized from 2007 to 2009 and was reinstated after a great deal of trouble. And essentially, I can understand exactly why Andrew would not derecognize it, because A, it will get re-recognized in the future, and B, it will set off the kind of institutional chaos that we don't need. I think that's it. Thanks. Go ahead. Terry, you had something you wanted to say?
I was just going to say that I only have secondhand information. My impression was that at many stations other than KPFT, there's been a reluctance by management to compel unpaid staff to do the recording,
mm-hmm.
and exactly why that's resistance. My guess is that a lot of stations are dependent on these unpaid people doing this wonderful work, and they don't want to piss them off and irritate them. It seems like they just don't want the headache, and the elections are not the top priority.
Yeah, if I could come back on that briefly, what I've heard is some concerns about undocumented folks not wanting to record much of anything in databases. And that could be a concern, although I don't know how many undocumented individuals we have as unpaid staff, but I'm sure that there are a few. And the other thing that I've heard is sort of, you know, as you're saying, that although it would save an enormous amount of aggravation on the elections front, it's sort of shifts some responsibility to volunteers, many of whom feel like they already do too much work and don't get paid, and how dare you impose another requirement. My sense, though, and this has been reinforced by a couple of LSBs passing motions like this, including KPFAs, is that the need for the station to be able to accurately have records of who's working and how much really sort of needs to come first. So I think this is going to have to get implemented. I don't think there's any other solution.
Okay. Next is Anthony.
Yeah. Terry, I don't know who was feeding you that stuff about the UPSO being in disarray and barely functional. I mean, it sounds like the talking points of the so-called Save KPFA clique. You know, the organization has had to battle for its right to be recognized. But as far as the list goes, we completed our own internal election roughly a month ago. I did the lion's share of the work in gathering a list. It wasn't so much, of the labor wasn't who's going to be on the list, because, for example, where we have department directors, I said, please, department director, send me a list of who in your department worked 30 hours in the previous year. So the music director sent me a list of music programmers, and the news director sent a list of news reporters. Some of them needed, especially the music one, because it's so large, it needed some things from who were on the air at 2 a.m., and even the music director was always aware of that. But and in departments where there is no director, I just went to the program heads and said, who worked on your program 30 hours in the past year. The biggest amount of labor was trying to find contact information for many of these people. And that, I think, is a shortcoming of station administration, because I don't see why it falls to the unpaid labor of the unpaid staff organization to have people's addresses when that information ought to be on file at the station for everybody for any number of reasons, safety and emergency contact and just knowing who's apt to be in the building at any given time. So that was the real labor, was trying to run that information down. Great many people had no information, and I had to comb through different sets of records, none of which were complete. The best source was the shift board database, which the former program director had demanded that people sign up on, but that was incomplete too. So just a lot of labor to build these records, but we just had a new unpaid staff organization election. We have new officers, or new council members, I should say. So we're up and running.
Okay. Well, we're
no one goes to meetings.
We're running short on time. So if we could shift now to Terry's the second part of Terry's report about the tabulation process.
Okay. Two things. I sent around the email about observers, and I think people are used to previous experiences, and observing at these elections is going to be incredibly dull and uninteresting and not very useful, is my assessment. People are welcome to do it. And as for supervision, I sent around that email this morning. Hope people had a chance to look at it, about my plan for that. And I would hope that the election committee, if it were possible, could, maybe through email, because maybe it's not time in this meeting, think, is there some person who's New York-based who is universally accepted as impartial or trustworthy? Even if they're partial, you still trust them. And if there's not somebody that the elections committee can recommend to me, I'm going to try and find a volunteer, and it quite likely could be people from the elections committee, but whoever, two people who are from opposing slates to serve as my eyes and ears, as I supervise remotely. I don't think that, quite frankly, is even necessary either, but if there's going to be observers there who might become problematic, I need people who can help Frank Fatone from ESC. I guess he's done enough union elections that maybe he's dealt with confrontational situations. I don't know. But I don't want to, characterize unions as being confrontational, but I think it might be good to have somebody designated, or two people who are designated to be, if you will, in charge with Frank, to not put the full burden on him. So that's where that's at.
Okay. I actually have some questions myself. Who else has a question or a comment? All right, I'll start, and then others. Who is that?
We have some background noise. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you're not speaking, please mute your phone. Okay. So let me start with something you didn't mention.
Bob, we're down 2 minutes again.
Oh, really? Okay.
what if we ask for a 10-minute extension? Is there any objection to 10 more minutes? Okay, hearing none, we have 10 more minutes on this. Now, Terry, you didn't mention in this report, but you did email us about the date, and I just wanted to understand the thinking, because the deadline for ballots to be received for the other four stations is December 11th, and for BAI is December 18th. But you also said that the counting, the tabulation, would occur starting on the 11th for the four stations and starting
right.
on the 18th. And
I can explain
I didn't
that.
Understand how that will allow those whose ballot arrives on that day, as they're allowed to, let it arrive.
Right.
How will their ballot then be counted?
The Election Services Corporation has a very friendly, very beneficial relationship with the post office employees in their town. And they always put all of the business reply mail into the P.O. boxes by 10 a.m. every day. And they don't put more mail into the box after 10 a.m. on any day. So as long as they pick up the ballots after 10 a.m., they can commence with the tally right then. However, because there's always a possibility that some new post office employee doesn't know that protocol, that some ballot could be there or whatever, ESC will do another sweep of the ballot box, later to see if there are any straggler ballots that need to be fed in. And they can be scanned late and added into the data. And still be tallied. So even if they start scanning ballots at, 11 a.m. For some election, if a ballot arrives at the P.O. box somehow contrary to post office policy later in the day, we will count that ballot as well.
So let me just understand. So you're saying if the ballot count goes the second day, but I thought you would
say... No, it only needs to be the same day. Because on the 11th, which is the deadline,
right.
All the mail that is going to arrive on that day will be in the P.O. box by 10 a.m. There will be no more drops into the P.O. box that day. However, we're going to do a check just to make sure that's really true at the
right.
end of the
day. Right. So if the check finds, two or three new pieces of mail...
We will scan those and add those into the totals.
The next day?
That night or the next day. We can add them in a week from then or whenever. I mean, we have the data. We can add a ballot, the next day easily. Understand that at the election there will be no announcement of results. We're just scanning ballots and looking at any problem ballots and making rulings on voter intent. If there's a problem with a ballot or a ballot's unscannable and we need to make it over onto a fresh piece of paper because it's all wrinkled or something like that, there might be some issues like that where Frank Fatone would like to have somebody else observe his process, but. The tally is going to be done by me and Election Services, not at the tally location. The tally location is the scanning of the opening of the envelopes, sorting of the ballots, and scanning of them.
The opening of the envelopes will be somewhere else?
No, it will be there. They'll bring all the envelopes we brought there. They'll be opened in the room. They'll be put into stacks. They'll be put into high-speed scanners, scanned, and then sealed.
Okay, and is your projection that if, I realize you said earlier it's unlikely, but if all the elections are concluded on the other four elections, rather, are concluded on the 11th, how long do you think it will take to count all four?
ESC about that, and when we had all five stations, 10 elections, they wanted 2 days to do it. I said, well, if WBAI is a week later and you have four stations, do you think you can do it in one day? And they said, I think we can, but we can't be positive. They think they can do all four stations, listener and staff elections, on the 11th. But they are reserving the option of going on the next day.
Okay. And so then for the BAI,
they could definitely do that on the
18th.
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
this is... Oh, okay.
Go ahead. No. Who wanted to speak?
This is Lydia.
Go ahead, Lydia, and then I have a question on another topic.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.